And then the other lesson I would say is, trying to take on too much. I think that can really be, you don't realize what mis how huge of a mistake that is until you're able to look back at it.
Life is an endless stream of challenges, but no worries. Manoj is bringing the world's best minds right here for you.
My gosh, Manoj, you just blew my mind.
Thank you, universe. Manoj, thank you.
I'm so grateful.
It makes me feel a little bit better.
Thank you.
Bootstrapping Your Dreams is here to give you what you need to succeed.
Hello and welcome to this new episode of Bootstrapping Your Dream Show. I'm your host, Manoj Agarwal, and today we'll be talking with Jonathan Hale. So Jonathan has a very interesting background. He works on large-scale projects, engineering projects, and we'll talk to him about how he got here, what his journey was like. Welcome, Jonathan.
Hey, thanks for having me, Manoj.
Absolutely. So before we get started, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, what do you do, talk about how we met, and then we'll get started.
Yeah, it was great to see you at the Speakeasy event, Steve Sims event in LA. And, you have friends that you know very well, and it's people you love being around. Then you have the people that you wish you're around more and want to get to know more, and you're one of those people for me. So yeah. Excited to be here to talk to you. But
absolutely.
Yeah, my background, so small town Kentucky boy, just grew up always knowing I wanted to be an engineer, and the STEM technologies and all those things were easy for me to grasp. I mean, it's hard work to go through school and all that, but it was easy for me from the beginning just to know that that's the field I wanted to be in. Now, it's evolved over time. I worked at Southeast regional engineering firm, specific in construction. So I started off when I was 18, 19, out on construction sites doing inspections. So I got to see projects happening. And then I got elevated to a point where I was leading a fairly good group of people on a $3 billion project. So it was quite the experience. I say I got I had 3 years of that project that gave me 10 years experience. So everything from project management, all the things that go into projects, but also the psychology behind teams working together, things getting done, and all those wonderful things that go along with construction.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's one of the things. So let me just recap. In our network, we have some people that we want to get to know, but I think people ignore the extended network, the people that our network knows, and it's always interesting to tap into that and see, what else we can discover. And about your journey, being in STEM and sort of pursuing your passion, that's another thing that I find a lot of people who find success in life, they keep pursuing the things that are of interest to them, and they are flexible enough to get in trouble if put themselves in difficult situations and just keep learning day by day. And from what you told me about the kind of projects you have done, it truly inspired me, the things that you have done, the kind of buildings that you have built. I would love for you to describe that a little bit in detail, this mega structure that you designed and built, and how are you perceive of these things that other people may think, oh, this is impossible, this is crazy, how do you come up with these things? How does your mind work and say, okay, this is something that we can perceive of, and not only perceive, but we can actually turn this into reality.
Yeah, so anything that happens in the built environment, just like in your environment, which I would call more the digital environment, that's where it's kind of cool for us to talk, because I live in the built environment. So anything in the built environment takes a wide range of technical expertise and a wide range of people with those expertise. So you can think, this project I'm talking about that I got to be on whenever I was young and lead a group of people for a small part, I will say a small part of it, but a very important part. That project specifically in Louisville, Kentucky, was dreamt about for 60 years. And it just came to a head perfectly in my career, so that I got to experience it, see the technical side of everything that went into it. I got to be boots on the ground. I also got to be involved in the design and all the engineering that happens during construction. But that really propelled me into a belief that a lot of things are possible that I didn't think were possible. Uh-huh. And so where my mind went was more to the team atmosphere of what it takes to get things done. And that gave me the confidence to then go out on my own and be an entrepreneur, because really it's the engineering of the teams that get the projects done. And so now a lot of what I do, and yes, we work on great projects. We can get into that, but 3 million square foot greenhouse that's changing the whole environment around food insecurity in this country and not being so dependent from, imports, and being able to produce our own food here with a greater efficiency. So we got to design and be the engineer of record for that whole building and four of those buildings now for a startup company. But it took a team. And so what I'm most passionate about is the psychology behind the team, building the culture within a group of people that allows you to scale at the right, I will say scale at the correct rate to capture the opportunity. Mm-hmm. And so that's what you dream about as an entrepreneur or a business owner, is all these things you can see that are happening that you think you could apply your business model to or your people to, you're able to scale fast enough to tack on those opportunities. So that's where I get passionate about, because now I get to lead groups of people. I get to formulate a culture. I get to bring people on and lead people. And that's exciting, even though I do have that technical mindset and I hold all the, all the technical professional degrees and all that to be able to do what we do.
That's so on point, because it's one thing to dream about what we can do, but it's another thing to sort of inspire other people and transfer our vision towards what is possible and keep that vision going and motivate other people and inspire other people. So that doesn't come easy. Like, even if you have all the technical skills, that you have all the experience, people are unpredictable. Mm-hmm. So how do you do that? Like, what is your secret formula for that?
So a couple of things that I just talked to our leadership team about just yesterday. There's a couple of analogies I want to use. And so if you think about a road, and then you think about the two ditches on either side, right? Think about that as a team member. And so that team member, if you can keep them on that road, they're efficient, they have what they need, they can be productive. You can even get toward the center of the road and get their tires really going, and you can get them going. But by how you lead them or how you formulate the culture of your company, you have one ditch, which is, I'm going to take advantage of this, right? And you lose that efficiency, you lose the drive of the employee. Or you have the other ditch, which is, I quit, because they have too many rules. And this is really important in our day and age, because we're in a cycle of employment where it's hard to find people. People feel like they have a lot of opportunity, and they do. But you got to provide the opportunity in your company. And so that's one thing I think about and I try to express into our leaders that lead groups of people. The other thing is, I really try to show the organization. So you got to have organization in your company, right? You can't just have wild, lines of communication. You got to have some sort of control. So most people think about that as a top-down org chart. What I like to do is flip the org chart upside down to show the level of responsibility that each person has. And if you don't handle the responsibility you have, and you can see it better inverted, right? Because you can see the funnel of people that hit the pinch points in the organization on the operational side. You say, if you don't take the ownership and the responsibility for these people and hold them up, give them what they need to be successful, you're passing that down the line and it's going to make the whole thing out of whack. And so thinking about that, that's really what I'm trying to, I guess, get to the next level with in our company so that we can scale again. And I also have great partners. We all feed off each other. They allow me to do that type of work. And some of them are better at the technical side. Some of them better at the policy procedures and all those things that go into these, building a company. Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. Yeah, these are great insights. I find that very interesting, like look at your company in an inverted view. I haven't heard a lot of people talk about it. So once again, like when you think so radically different, do you find it difficult, or do you find any resistance of people looking at it that way? You know, when they walk into your company, when they become a part of your team, do you have to like do some? Do you have to take them through some sort of an unlearning process where they start to think differently before they start to really gel into the team?
Yeah, the first concept we try to go through with any new person in our company is our idea of service. So our why is that we serve people. And so we do that in the built environment. We do that through architecture, design, engineering, construction, all the things that make a raw piece of land whatever the vision is for that property. And so we start with community, client, team. And so we teach the principles of the why of what we do. We help people, right? And we do it in these three aspects, right? The client is the one that's going to prop our business model up, right? That's the transaction. And we all can logically think through why the client's important. So that one's pretty easy. But the community and team sometimes is left to the wayside behind the client. And I call it a three-legged stool. If you take one away, you're really on shaky ground. You're not going to be able to stand up very long. And so the community aspect provides the clients the ability to do projects. And it's also where our team members live. And then the team aspect, if it's done right, produces the right consulting service or relationship for the client so that we can get the projects done. And so that's initially what we go through. Now, you can obviously get the wrong people in the wrong seats. And so that happens. But if you build that baseline, you know, it's amazing that I've been able to, and I've been really humbled by this. We've had people elevated into organizational leadership positions and found out it was the wrong seat at the wrong time. It doesn't mean they were bad at what they did. It was just the wrong position for them at the wrong time. And they were okay with pulling back out of that and staying in our firm and doing what their actual strengths were to support the team. And you don't hear about that a lot. I don't hear a lot of you get demoted.
Yeah.
That's the wrong term, right? But they stayed and they're really effective. And we have a couple examples of that. Now, we do have others that it's just not the right fit because they want to maybe do the what I would call the old school way of leadership, which is follow my direction only, not what you want to do, do what I want to do. And so that doesn't work very well in our company.
That's amazing. It also speaks to your style of leadership. So that's great. Now let's step back and you were talking about this particular project, like 3 million square feet, which affects the food situation, the import situation, and let's talk about that. Like because a lot of people don't realize how our economy is set up. Like we go to the superstore, we buy the food. But what happens behind the scenes? You know, where is the food coming from? What are the, the pieces or the pieces of the puzzle that are fit together? And you are, designing a big piece of this puzzle, which is generally people don't even understand. It's always hidden. So let's quickly talk about that.
Yeah. So what most people, the general public, wouldn't understand is in every section of our country, there's hot and cold seasons for every type of produce, right? So let's just use here, and we'll use one specific type to illustrate this. So tomatoes in Kentucky, you're gonna have local farmers, local just people that produce tomatoes from anywhere from June to let's say October, but there's an off season, and everybody still wants to eat tomatoes, right? So all of that is imported from Mexico from that point until you get your next local crop. And so what this company we were working with was trying to do was saying, okay, if we build 3 million square feet, okay, that's a, just to give you an idea of that, that's a mile long building, glass building. It's wild to see. It's actually wild to see, but a mile long building. And so in Kentucky, there's not a lot of flat ground. So we had to do a lot of work to get to that point. But if we do that and we hit the off peak time, right? We hit whenever we're usually importing, you're going to have fresh vegetables. They're able to get a 30x yield per acre. And they're only making a 1% with that one facility, a 1% dent in the import market, right? So you think, okay, well, that's really scalable if you can get your costs right. And that's what they're trying to do. As a startup company, when they came to us, they had failed on one site where they were trying to, you know, initially they were trying to reclaim mine sites, old strip coal mine sites. We have a lot of those in Eastern Kentucky, and it just didn't work for that building, but we helped them find a site. So they came to us whenever they were trying to go for round two. There were just three people at that time, and they raised $120 million to build this first facility. And now they've done four of them. And so it's really been cool to see. And there's a lot that's involved in the engineering, all the way from, you know, you can think about any development process. You got the site selection, which will include incentives in that jurisdiction, all the things that communities are trying to get that project, right? Yeah. All the way from that to making sure the soil and the ground and everything's suitable for construction. And then you go through the actual design and construction. And so these things take 18 to 24 months to do from start to finish, from the time you decide what site you're going to work on.
Amazing. So that was just mind-blowing, like 1 mile-long building. And and you said 30x increase in yield? 30x?
Yeah, so they take all the rainwater we get in Kentucky. We have quite a bit of rain every year. And they funneled into a large pond that then they pump back into the facility to water all the tomato plants. Mm-hmm. And so it's very efficient. You know, you can get, like you said, 30x. It may be more than that. They'll have real data coming out over the years of what they're actually able to do. But it's pretty wild how much yield they can get.
Yeah, it's just amazing how, that's just mind-blowing. So where do you think agricultural industry will be in 5 to 10 years? Like, are we going to see many more advancements, or this is basically sort of the height of efficiency or the scale that we can achieve?
I think you'll see a lot more than this. I mean, you have to follow the money. So there is some venture capital firms that are more on the ag tech. I guess they're getting into ag tech. Now, there has to be a couple of these ventures that show that they can get the rate of return on the actual investment. Now, so you know the agricultural will work, right? You're using less land for more yield. All that, in theory, is really good. So now, how do you catch up to make sure the built environment, the actual facility that they're building, will create the right rate of return and for all the pro formas? So that's what I think is waiting to be seen. There's also a trend in urban environments to do vertical farming. And I know you've heard of that. So reclaiming old, a lot of industrial use areas, maybe blighted areas, and turning those into a vertical farm that then can hit food desert areas, as they call it. So areas within cities that they don't have a grocery within so many miles or walking distance. So those are the type of things that are going to be really good for our country. And things like the war in Ukraine and the grain shortages they had there, all that pushes that technology further because it gets more global instead of just just in the U.S. But this really spun out. I don't know if you know much history, but it really spun out of the Netherlands during World War II. They decided, hey, we're going to be able to produce what we need to eat. And so they're the leaders in this industry. They have, if you look north of Amsterdam on Google Maps, you can see these facilities are all over the countryside. And so they've really taken that to heart. And now it's starting to go into other countries like the US.
Wow, that's amazing. And as you said, one of the other things that we talked about was how much data you collect. You know, obviously in this facility, a lot is going on in the physical environment, but you're collecting data through drones and whatnot. So can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, so this is something we haven't put a lot of time to because, you know, a traditional engineering consulting industry, you get a job, you do the job, and then you archive it, right? Now you're supposed to keep it. So we have all this data. And one thing, I was listening to you and Steve yesterday on your little talk on ChatGPT, and all that it can do, and also your theories about what people are going to be investing in. It's not gold anymore. It's data. It's how do we get our hands on data so we can process it and use it. And that's something I'd really like to explore in this coming year. I'm planning to put some time toward that and even make a hire or maybe get a vendor partner in to help us think through that, because we do have a lot of data. We get a lot of timestamp data. We get a lot of we just produce terabytes and terabytes of data, and I know it's useful. I just don't know how yet. And so I'm trying to get my mind around that.
So it's I just want the audience to understand, when they buy the tomato in the superstore, that's what's happening behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. A mile long building, as you said, like it's really difficult to even imagine, and drones flying all over the place and collecting data, and the yield is 30x because the water is being recycled. It's just amazing.
You are listening to Bootstrapping Your Dreams show with Manoj Agarwal. Businesses face numerous challenges like finding the right product market fit, determining the market size, implementing a winning go-to-market strategy, crafting customer-centric USP, competitive analysis, looking for funding, building up cash flow and profitability. We have made a lot of free resources available to the entrepreneurial community, including this podcast. We invite you to check out our websites and follow us on social channels. The links are in the show notes. We hope you find the resources useful and utilize them to grow your business. We also have some programs for entrepreneurs. If you find our content useful, then you will definitely find the programs outstanding. So do check them out.
Now, in this journey, of course, in this particular project and in your journey, you must have made a lot of mistakes. Mistakes as in things that you did not expect to see, and mm-hmm. you learn from it. As all successful entrepreneurs do, mistakes turn into opportunities, lessons. So can you share with us any important lessons or things that you have learned along the way?
Yeah, made a lot of mistakes that cost a lot of money. I think we all have. Like you said, each one has a different flavor to it, but I will put it in this package. I think I've made a lot of mistakes, and it's partly because of my personality. So you have to know yourself to understand why mistakes are made. And so I'm a trusting person. I'm more of a, I'm not a hard driver. I'm not that person that follows up 20 times. So a lot of the mistakes that I've been a part of is involved in contractual stuff. Whenever you make assumptions, you move forward, you press forward because you want to meet the goal, but you don't clean up everything on the back end. And then when things go wrong, you learn that lesson and you have good attorneys. So it's an unfortunate lesson to learn. And then the other lesson I would say is, trying to take on too much. I think that can really be, you don't realize how huge of a mistake that is until you're able to look back at it. So whenever you're taking on too much as a leader and you're not delegating to the proper people, you're not allowing these things to be shared, these responsibilities to be shared, that's opportunity cost. That's making mistakes on projects. That's not getting in front of a hiring and getting the right people in the door. That, just think about the, we always think about the expense. So we think the mistake is the bill we had to pay, or we had to eat, or we had to all that. But really, it's opportunity is a higher rate of mistake, because you can only pay out so much. You have insurance for that, right? But what you could have gotten is infinite almost in business. So I would trend toward that, but I have great, great mentors and partners that have probably eliminated a lot of the risk that I could have been in. Because if I was doing this on my own, I would have made even more mistakes. And I do commend people that start young and they've done it on their own and they fought through, because I didn't have to do that. From my first journey as an entrepreneur, I had partners and I had mentors right there. So mm-hmm. what I would call a personal board of directors, which is so important.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. As you said, sometimes as ambitious entrepreneurs, and And people basically just who want to achieve a lot, you know, we start to say yes to everything. And sometimes that may be dangerous, as you said, like, you know, it is, you have to make it sustainable. And sustainable doesn't mean that you go out and eat whatever you can, but you can only eat so much and then delegate the rest. So that's a very important lesson. Now, in your field, in your business, are you unique or is there a lot of competition in terms of what you do?
There's a lot of competition in the individual service lines that we provide, but we've done it. We've really just scaled to a point that our customers wanted us to. You know, we didn't have a plan to say, okay, we're going to do architecture in-house. We're going to do geotechnical engineering in-house. We're going to do surveying in-house. We're going to do civil engineering in-house. We're going to do environmental engineering in-house. We're going to do, you know, we bought a GC firm 2 years ago. So we're going to do construction in-house. But it's what people want and require now, because, you know, if you can think about the complexity of a project, because you know project management just as well as anybody, but in the built environment, you have all these different entities and all these different people. And so if you're an owner and even an owner operator that's trying to do a project, what's better to have 12 people that you have to call and you have to then cross coordinate with all 12 people or one person? And so our business model spun out of that. People would just keep asking us, why don't you, can you also? And so when people are asking those questions, the light bulb has to go off. And so that's what happened. So all that takes is the right team. That's what I was talking about, team. If you have created a company that has the right foundation, has the right culture, you can quickly add pods or groups of teams that then can do more. And so that's, you just have to be open to that. A lot of people in my field, so I'm a civil engineering graduate, also have a physics degree, but a lot of people in that field sometimes don't think outside of what their degree is. So most people, if you would go to an engineering conference, they would say, I'm a civil engineer. Well, I want to be a business person. I want to be someone who takes advantage of opportunity. And I happen to be trained as a civil engineer. And I think that's the difference. If you can switch that mindset to what your true identity is, then you have a much greater ability to actually serve the people you want to serve.
Yeah, that's a very important point. And I think I want to dig deeper into both these things. So one is, how do you differentiate yourself as a business in a competitive environment? And then I also want to talk about this personal mindset that you, I think that's much more important, because a lot of people, what I have seen in my experience is they want to grow very fast. They want to achieve big things, but by themselves, they put themselves into this box, as you said, like I'm this, and they don't realize that pond is only that big, you know, it is only so big, and you can be the biggest fish in that small pond, but you're not going to be able to get to where you want to be. So let's take this, you know, these two aspects one after the other. So how do you differentiate yourself as a business? Is it because you have this integrated sort of end-to-end offering, or are there more competitors in that field as well? And if so, how do you differentiate yourself?
There are a few. But I would say the relational side is first. So for us, we have to get the person to commit to something. Once they commit to at least one thing, we can show them all the other things we do. And so our business model does give us the competitive advantage. But how we go after the individual customer and the relationship is first. And so, you know, we have core values. So the core values we have are kindness, we have honesty, loyalty, excellence, and creativity. And so when you think about loyalty, is what I believe gives us the highest degree of differentiating between our competitors, because we teach you don't not only produce the project to the highest level you can, but you also, I want you to feel and I want you to get behind the vision of the client. So understand why they're doing what they're doing. Once you understand that, then you're going to feel it. Like, you're going to take that on for yourself. And so that loyalty aspect of what we do in consulting is so good. It's not just a transaction. We got to help the person achieve the goal and then guide them along that way. And so that's what I think gives us the greatest you know, the competitive advantage.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think it ties very well to what you were saying earlier for the core values for your team itself. So it's like a continuum of the same thing that flows into your relationship internally and externally outside of your company. Yeah,
and that's where the client, community, team. If you do those core values across that whole spectrum, you're going to be successful.
Yeah,
you know,
that's awesome. So, and let's talk about this notion of thinking outside the box, like not putting yourself in the box. Did you always think like that, or was there a certain point in time where you said, "Hey, you know, I need to like expand my horizons and sort of look at myself in a bigger picture"?
Yeah, that's definitely a journey for me. So by default, I am not that. So that's the funny thing. There's you know, you hear all these different personality tests you can take to find out more about yourself. So one thing that was funny, there's a Gallup one called Strength Finders. I don't know if you've ever heard of that one, but I did the full assessment, and my least, there's 34 different traits you can have. My number 34 was strategic thinking. And so you go, wow, that's not good as a CEO of a company trying to lead, right? But I have a partner who's very innovative. And so all I had to do was understand why he saw all the things that he would do as not really that risky, when other people would go, man, that's really risky. And then I understood, wow, it's not as complicated and it's not as risky as I thought. And so over time, my mind shifted in business, and I was able to come alongside of him, help him be successful. And that's what gave me the mindset of a business person instead of an engineer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I had a mentor once. He told me, it was early on, I was probably 28. He said, he found out my personality. He goes, you're going to have a hard time leading. Like, I don't think the position of leading a company is good for you. He said, based on my personality. And I took that to heart, because it wasn't something that made me like depressed or like, wow, I'm not going to be successful. It was like, I better have good people around me if that's the trajectory that I get on. And at that point, I didn't know or not. But once I got in that position, having the group of people around me, I just prop them up, because their strengths will shine and we'll all grow together.
Yeah. So that's one of the interesting things about you. I find that a lot of people, if they got that advice or feedback, they'll actually just mold themselves to, you know, sort of make that true and say, okay, I'm not a good leader. I'm not even going to try. It's a difficult mindset to develop, to say, okay, I understand that's a problem. Now, how do I solve it and figure out a solution to that? So that's great. You talked a lot about team. You talked about a lot about mentors. So what impact did mentors and coaches have on you? And when, like, do you mentor other people, and what advice do you give them? Like, because in my opinion, you know, as you said, we can only achieve so much. We are only good at, you know, a few things, and people around us are what makes us who we are. So what are your views? Can you share some stories around mentorship, and whether you received some mentorship that changed your life, or you gave some mentorship to somebody?
Yes, for sure. So mentors have been a massive contributor to me being able to do what I do. And I know it'll continue to. So I don't think we ever grow out of being mentored. But there is a transition. And I try to teach some of our younger staff, there is a transition where you can't just be a taker. You know, you can't just think, you got to get out of the mindset that I need. You also can give. And so you have to have that environment within the company. So the people that I'm closest to or have the most influence with in our team, I try to express that. I try to show them examples of that. And so, and then outside of my specific, the company role and responsibility I have, I've been really blessed to be on a couple boards of nonprofits, and then also run some small groups through some of the churches that I'm involved with. So I do have that, but we bring business into it, because we live in a principled world. We don't live in, you go to work and it's different than you go to home and it's different. Yes, those circumstances are different, but the principles never change. And so I'm not a believer that you can separate those things from a personnel, like from a personal level. Yes, you can separate the, you know, the influence each have on the other, and you should to a certain extent, but you better not be changing in between or else you're going to confuse yourself. Mm-hmm. And so I do have a lot of opportunity, most of it because I'm still young and I still acknowledge that. I don't want to act like I'm older than I am or younger than I am. I do need a lot of mentorship, but I also try to lead by example and how I mentor more so than speaking it, because I think words are fine, and you have to speak words as a leader. You have to get out in front and speak the vision, but you got to put the action behind it. So I try to do action, and I try to get into environments where I know I can be useful. And then if you're useful and you act in a certain way consistently, then you are going to mentor people by default.
So. Absolutely. Absolutely. And one more question was, you know, we got into this discussion about personal branding and how it is important these days and how things are changing, how people are sort of, you know, how people are looking at as a personal brand, what impact it has on you as a person and your business. So can you share with us some views about that? Because I know that you have your own opinions about that, and how do you do that?
Yeah, I'm trying to learn more about it and more about what I would be successful doing. You know, I've just not been a big social media guy. So I'm most active on LinkedIn, and I use that platform the most just because it fits who I am better. But like, I've opened an Instagram and I was like, it's not for me. And I closed it because I don't want to do something just half-hearted.
Yeah.
But I do think that each person can be successful in it in their own way. So one of the strategic focuses that we had our holiday party for work just a couple nights ago, one of the strategic focuses, I want to, you know, build our brand by building our people. And so that's giving people more opportunity to get out in front and be who they are externally. And so we want to focus on that as a company. I want people to shine in our company. I may not be out in front all the time. I can't sustain that lifestyle on social media for some reason. I do want to be more active maybe in this environment. I enjoy this a lot, but I'm not against one way or the other in personal brand. I just want it to fit who I am, and I want it to fit who the people are that are doing it well. So I want to give people that opportunity in our company, but I need a lot of mentorship on this, and I'm looking forward to learning more about it.
What do you think is the impact? And again, not pushing anything, like, you know, I want to know your view, like, what is the importance of this process or exercise? And why do you think it is important? Like, you're encouraging your people to do that. So what is the impact do you think that'll have?
Yeah, so it's definitely, if I'm thinking as a business owner, it's definitely something that gives some sustainability to your business. And so if you create an environment where people get to, at the basic surface level, scratch that itch and you encourage it, that's good. Okay. Now, if they're really good at what they do, then you become an expert in your field, and you get to, you know, the gifts and unique talents that you have within your team, they get to shine and they get to show that off and help other people just like you do. I think you do that very, very well. You show your expertise. You don't flaunt it. It doesn't come across as I'm the best. It's just, here is the experience and the knowledge I have, I want to share it with you. And that's what I would love to do. And I think that is so good. Where I get, I won't say that it's, you know, I try not to get into controversial things, because we go and help people. We don't help a certain group of people. We want to help people do what they do. And so I shy away from that. Not that I don't have my own personal views on that. I don't shy away from who I am. I'm a Christian. I'm a father. I'm a husband. You know, I have 5 kids. And I have a lovely wife. So I don't shy away from anything personally, but I also don't try to push those things out too much. So, but I'm telling you right now, I don't have this thought through very well, but I do know that it's the environment we live in. We live in a global environment. We live in a knowledge sharing environment, and those things have to be active in your company for you to have sustainability.
Absolutely. Great. And then, you know, obviously, I'm a dad myself. I had to take a quick break during this interview. And I know you have five kids and you shared some stories about being a dad now. So I do want to touch this last point about being a parent, running a company, being an ambitious entrepreneur. And it's not easy at all. So a lot of people that I talk to, they say, oh, you know, it's too late for me. You know, I can't do it. I've got family. And so how do you balance your life? What do you say to those people who say, hey, you know, I can't do this because of this and that? And so what has been your experience? You know, obviously five kids, I can't even imagine. I have two. Share your thoughts as somebody who can handle much more.
So we are blessed. My wife is able to spend a lot of time with the kids. She doesn't have a full-time job, except for that, which is a very full-time job. So you have to figure out what's right for you and your spouse in that environment, or you and your children as they grow. What can they handle? What can't they handle? I do also try to incorporate all of it together, so I don't put up barriers. So I think my son's actually supposed to join me here at the office in about an hour. You know, it's just, you got to look at each individual opportunity you have and do a risk analysis on it. And that's, your time is one of the greatest things you have. So I've done a poor job in the past of getting overcommitted, and my wife's given me a lot of grace in that. And sometimes in those instances, you just have to sleep less. And that's almost like, you know, it's just what you got to do. But in other instances, you know, you have to be able to be influential with what you have. You know, that's a gift you have. And so I don't want to say no whenever I should say yes. And I want my family to be involved. You know, we're involved with some nonprofits that we both care about. My family is involved with me in it. They give a lot of their time to it, which is just as important as me, you know, sitting on any board or making any decision. So I do encourage people to, you know, give themselves grace in this, but also push yourself a little bit, because we all can, you know, if you were to log every bit of your time throughout a week, you can find times that you're not being efficient and you're not really doing anything helpful to anybody.
Yeah.
And so that's the type of time you need to be trying to switch out with things that you can be helpful to.
Yeah. I think those are great points. Like, you know, one thing which was very interesting was to involve the family in what you're doing. So that serves multiple purposes. And then, one thing I also got was, if you have some gift, it's your responsibility to share it with the world and try to balance it. So this is great advice. Thank you so much, Jonathan. It has been such a pleasure knowing you and learning about the work you do, and just looking at different points of view, the way that you look at the world. It has been really, really good experience. Thank you so much for being with us, sharing your thoughts with the audience. Now, before I let you go, how can people get in touch with you if they want to connect with you, if they want to work with you?
Yeah, so mainly I'm on LinkedIn. I'm active there personally. So Jonathan L. Hale is my handle there. And then email. So, you know, our websites, thoroughbredfirm.com and hargettconstruction.com. You can find me there. So those are the three ways, I'd say.
Okay, great. We'll put those links in the show notes.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Same hand. Yep. Thank you.
Great topic of the day. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Thanks for tuning in to Bootstrapping Your Dream. Bootstrapping Your Dream. We bring you life-changing insights about starting and growing your business, making your life and family happy. Given the fact that you listened to the whole episode, we know you are an awesome fan.
Awesome fan.
So why not help us spread the message? Please share the podcast with others who can benefit from it. And if you are feeling extra generous, leave a review on iTunes or any other platform where you are listening to the podcast.